The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. As we're in our Advent season, we say, as we do all the time, just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And the world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So, Fanny, if you got to love God, you got to love your neighbor, you got to love yourself. What do you think the hardest of those is?
I think I would say... Oh my God, I honestly think they both hold the same weight.
Well, we got three.
Yeah.
We got God, self, and others.
Okay. So I think I would pick others because I think God may be an easier person to love because God is love and he offers love. So it's sort of easy to love someone who loves you back.
Okay.
Yourself, I think we're a little selfish sometimes. So, you know, I think that's pretty easy. Others is, I think, the most difficult because some people may get us mad. We may get upset with certain people, even, you know, people that you love.
But you just got to love a few people, right?
Yeah. And I don't know.
No.
No? I don't think God meant that, no.
Oh.
I think you have to even love your enemy. So that's, I think that may be one of the hardest things to do.
Okay, but how do you love God?
Well, I think that one of the main reasons you can show God that you love him is by doing as much as you can for him, doing as much as you can according to his will.
Yeah, but okay, so here's my problem with God. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people I love, people I like, I give them presents. And,
right.
You know,
yes.
and I talk
uh-huh.
to them. We go out to dinner. We do lots
There's
of
interaction.
Yeah,
and,
stuff
yeah.
like that. God.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jake, what do you think? I mean, what is, God doesn't need a sweater, does he?
As far as I know, no. There's nothing about sweaters in the Bible in terms
right.
of God wearing.
Right. I mean, I don't know what to get God. I mean, what do I get Jesus for Christmas? It's his birthday, so what do I get him?
I think that Jesus wants you to love your neighbor. I think that's good enough.
You're so spiritual, aren't you?
I mean, honestly, that's what it says in the Bible. So I'm giving you the Bible answer.
All right, but he doesn't want a sweater.
No.
I would go with wine. He likes wine. That's in there. Get him a nice
one.
Bottle of wine.
Oh, no. I know what I can do. I can save money. I give him a nice decanter filled with water.
Yes.
Water and say, do your thing.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think that's good. Because you know what that does? That says I have faith that he can do it.
Yep. Nice.
It doesn't say that I'm being a cheap.
It's a double present.
It's a double present.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. So we buy Jesus a decanter of water.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I bet you, because we have a smart guest on today. We have a guest on in just a few minutes. Inez San Martin, who is a reporter, and she's the Roman bureau chief and the Vatican correspondent for Crook, so she knows a lot of stuff. I bet you she's got some good gift hints for Jesus. What do you think?
Maybe. I hope so.
All right. So let's go. Why don't we go to our first guest? Inez San Martin, thank you for joining us on Just Love. Well, okay. Well, we'll go to Inez in just a minute. But so I think we should figure out what we want from Jesus and what Jesus wants. So it's anyway. But we're going to speak about Nicaragua. We're going to speak about the situation there and what the difficulties are in that neck of the woods. And so we're gonna speak about that in just a few minutes. But actually, we're gonna try to get our guests back on. So, Fanny, how you doing on your Christmas shopping?
I'm doing horrible.
Really?
I am. I think I've mentioned this that I'm pretty good at starting early.
Right.
So 1 year I started in October and I was done by November.
Right.
But it's been really difficult for me this year. I have one present.
Really?
One. Yeah. I don't know. I think I've been preoccupied with other things, and I'm trying to save money because I would like to buy my own apartment. So it's getting a little bit difficult to do both.
So here's my suggestion for you, okay? And you got to do it relatively soon, but you still got a little time. I find the most economical, appropriate, good gifts online.
Yes.
Because, and you know what I always do when I get the stuff, I always sort from cheapest to most expensive.
Oh, that's
yeah. That way you look at them.
So do you usually look on Amazon?
Oh, always.
Okay.
Always. Mm-hmm. Because that's
then you can get Prime 2-day shipping.
Yeah,
and
I'm part of Prime, and so
yeah.
Anyway, so let's go to our guest, Inez San Martin. Inez, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
No, thank you guys for bringing me.
Great. That is great. And I know
I must say I'm calling in from Argentina, so the connection might be a little bit odd.
No, okay. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. But thank you so much. I was delighted to kind of meet you for in person at the 5th Encuentro down in Texas, because you're my companion on when I'm driving around on Saturday morning. I listen to you on the Catholic Channel with Crookses Online. So I was just delighted to meet you.
Yeah.
It was
great for me to meet you too.
Good. So, Inez, you know what caught my eye, and thank you for taking the time to be with us. You've done some reporting on what is a really difficult situation in Nicaragua. So would you share with our listeners what's going on in Nicaragua, and what's the unrest there? What's the violence? What's going on in that country?
Of course. First of all, I had the pleasure to be in Nicaragua last month, the last 2 weeks of November, as part of a trip to that was organized by Aid Church in Need, specifically to try to figure out what is going on in Nicaragua. As you said, there's a crisis right now. It basically has to do with the government of President Daniel Ortega, in many ways, as it's been described to me, becoming the dictator he helped overturn in the late 1970s. The people are protesting against his government. Some 500 people have been killed in clashes between the military and paramilitary and protesters, most of whom are students. And the Catholic Church did not stay in the sidelines. On the contrary, it spoke up. You have bishops today who are very, very active in what is an attempt to find a dialogue way out of it. Of this big crisis, but so not looking good. And really good to see the bishops, to be honest, to just raise voice. And what they kept while saying is, we're here with the people. We're not against the government.
Yeah, so that's a very, very difficult situation. And isn't that the situation where President Ortega, he was one of those who came to power kind of promising on a reform agenda, you know, going back decades, and now it seems like it's turned in another direction. Is my memory serving me correctly?
Yes, it is. Actually, it was funny because when I first started writing about the crisis, my editor was like, is the same Ortega from the 1980s? Or is
Yeah, it is.
This is a different guy.
Yeah.
He literally, as you said, he rose to power with the promise of reform, a peaceful revolution, you know, calling for democracy in Nicaragua. And now he's become the dictator that he helped, the dictatorship or the dynasty that he helped to bring down. We're talking about a man who is currently in his third presidency. His running mate was his wife, Rosario Murillo. And he literally changed the constitution for that to be legal, because it wasn't legal until he decided so in 2015. 2016, there were elections that no one thinks were transparent. And right now we have them in power again until 2022. What the bishops and the people are asking for is for elections to be held as early as next year. Problem is there's not really very strong candidate on the opposition because Ortega has been really good at making sure that no one dares to speak up.
So from, you know, from our, you know, Catholic perspective of participation and democracy, obviously we think free elections are a good thing. They're important that people's voice is there, that they're is the ability to participate.
Right.
So we believe that. Well, if we got beyond that core, you know, value and belief, you know, sometimes, even though they're not popularly elected, sometimes people who get to power by other ways actually do really good things. I mean, they, you know, it may be rare, but they do good things. But apparently from what we're hearing is that this administration, his administration, is not doing good things for the people. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, we're seeing poverty levels grow in Nicaragua. We're seeing corruption levels grow in Nicaragua. You have the usual case of various Central American and Latin American countries, and I say this as an Argentinian, of the people in power and their friends getting richer and everyone else getting poorer. We're talking about a country which has a decimated school system, even though the government originally decided to invest a lot of money in education. Of course, when I talk about initially, I mean the 1980s. So the direction of the government changed a lot since they were first elected back then to what it's become since it got reelected in 2006. We're talking about a country that has seen some advancements, but not as much as it should have based on what the government promised.
We're speaking with Inez San Martin, who is a reporter for Crux. She is the Rome bureau chief and the Vatican international correspondent. And she's speaking to us from Argentina. We're delighted that she is speaking to us from Argentina. And if, you know, every now and then there's a little bit of a fading in and out, that's because she's gone out of her way to make sure she could be in touch with us today from Argentina. So, Inez, what went wrong? I mean, he came on a reform path, he was doing good. What happened? A sin? Original sin? Or what happened that it went wrong?
I was going to say greed. Mm. In many ways, that's, some would argue, the first original scene. But, and that's what's went wrong. Because, I mean, you had a people committed to reform. You had a people who trusted in its politicians, which is something you don't see very often nowadays. But you also have, people who saw they had power and they saw that they could get away with virtually doing it. Anything they wanted, and they have been doing whatever they wanted to do for the past 15 years. And people finally this year said enough is enough. We want a country that has four powers. We want a justice system that's independent from the national government. And the government is saying, well, no, we want to stay in power for as long as we feel like it. And if we need to kill you to stay in power, we're going to do so. And they are doing so by, I mean, again, they killed 500 people in protests since April. Hundreds are currently in prison and completely cut off from the outside world. And thousands have had to flee the country, including the entire family of one Catholic bishop, the auxiliary of Managua.
So Inez, let's talk about that a little bit because, I think in a very simplistic way, we think the church should be involved in speaking out for justice. But again, in a simplistic way, we kind of shy away from partisan politics. So in this situation, which there's a lot of politics going on and a lot of injustice, how does the church kind of get involved in that? You know, and kind of be in favor of justice, but, you know, not be overly kind of involved in the partisan politics. How's that play itself out in Nicaragua?
Well, it's actually been a very thin line that most people argue that bishops have been able to actually walk on, because you have bishops who were there when the protests were taking place. And by there, I mean they were interceding in favor of policemen who had been kidnapped by, you know, protesters who at some point weren't as peaceful as they were at the beginning. And you also have priests who were opening up the doors of the cathedral in Managua and in Granada and in our cities, dioceses, so that the people who were wounded in the protest could actually find refuge in the Catholic Church. And they have since then been mediators and observers in a national dialogue that today is suspended. But they were always very frank as to what do the people want. And that's what we're going to try to get for the people. But we're talking about bishops who are capable of calling up the president in their cell phone and say, hey, this cannot work, this won't work. You need to stop shooting at the people who are today hiding in a church, which literally happened in Managua. People were hiding in a church for 12 hours and they were being shot at with AK-47.
So from what you're describing, it is an incredibly violent situation, in which there's a lot going on there. And, you know, if they're shooting into churches, that even brings it to a new level of violence and chaos and division that's in the country.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, right now the situation is somewhat pacified. Everyone lives in fear, is what I was told, what we kept hearing time and time again. But I actually have a piece, if I might say so, on the Crux website, which is cruxnow.com, titled "When Christ Was the Night Christ Was Shot in Nicaragua." And it actually tells a story of something that happened repeatedly across the country, but specifically in this case in the church in Managua, where some 200 college students were hidden the entire night from military and paramilitary forces who shot 130 projectiles into the roof of the church. Two of them actually hitting the where the Holy Sacrament is kept. So it really was a violent situation for quite some time, and people today live in fear. Because the government has very good ways of knowing who participated in the protest, and they are going after them. People today are being persecuted for having taken part in rallies in March, and they're being imprisoned. They're being, a lot of them shot to death, or what we call in Latin America, are being disappeared. They are just being taken from their homes and not coming back. The church has to speak up.
Is there in this situation, is there a opposition military group, rebels or people who armed, kind of people who are taking up arms against the government? Is there much of that going on in the current struggle?
There is some talk of some of those groups currently being formed. Mostly in the jungle region of Nicaragua, which is the northern region of Nicaragua, which is where the civil war kind of last came to an end in the 1980s, and it actually lasted until the beginning of the 1990s. A lot of people had weapons buried instead of returned or given to the government, and the people are basically bringing their weapons back. But we're talking about people who are fighting Russian AK-47 2017 with AK-47 or whatever shotgun they had in the 1980s. So it's a very uneven fight. And at the end of the day, these are mostly campesinos or peasant people who live in the jungle in Nicaragua, who've kind of been hidden since the 1980s and have been forgotten by the system that kept them hidden in many ways. So is there an armed opposition? I guess my response would be there could be one in the future, but right now it's it's unfair to actually call them an actual armed opposition.
So Inez, in all of these kind of conflicts, these battles, this awful situation, you know, allegiances sway and things like that. And as you said, there wasn't much transparency or accountability in their most recent election. What do you think the general mood of the people in the country is towards Ortega? Is there widespread kind of enough is enough and time for him to go? Or, you know, what's the general feel?
There seems to be a generalized enough is enough feeling. Right now we're talking about a president who got elected with 30% of the votes. That's something he got by changing the constitution, and it doesn't matter how many votes the winning person has, as long as you have more than the person you're running against. And of those 30%, what I kept hearing was some 10% are actual loyal supporters of Daniel Ortega. The other 20% are people who somehow benefited from their government in a direct way and just, you know, voted for them and supported them, but they're getting tired themselves. And by direct support from the government, I mean, as someone literally told me, the government gave me a chicken, a pig, and a cow. You know, that's more than the previous government gave me. And I'm like, okay, that's a great reason to vote for a person because they give you a chicken, a pig, and a cow.
Yeah.
Loyalties are starting to wind down.
And what's the feeling of the support from the people for the role of the church? Is there strong allegiance? Are they pleased that the church is speaking out, or how's that allegiance playing itself out?
It is pretty strong. Priests and bishops right now are trying to stay on the quiet side, trying to cool things down and kind of, at wherever is possible, keep politics at the church, because, you know, that they're conscious of the fact that they have to be Catholic priests for everyone, not only for those who are against the government or for those who are in favor of, you know, anticipating the elections. But the mood of the people seems to be generally towards, in favor of the bishops. And we saw this, there was a big rally in support of the bishops that was actually held in August. And you saw hundreds of thousands of people coming out in all over Nicaragua, including evangelicals and Pentecostals and Protestant pastors who were leading, you know, their entire congregation in this rally in favor of the Catholic bishops and the role the priests had played during the protests. And by that, I mean, a lot of them were literally acting as human shields and trying to put themselves between the military and the protesters.
Inez San Martin, thank you so much for your generosity and your time. And thanks for calling in from Argentina, and I was really enlightened by your sharing what's going on in Nicaragua, and to a certain extent, very moved by it, that it's just an awful, awful situation. So thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you.
Inez San Martin, the Rome Bureau Chief and the International Vatican Correspondent for Crux, who was speaking to us about the situation in Nicaragua from Argentina. Let's take a break and we'll come back. We got some news, we got some music, and we'll kind of continue talking about what's going on in the world and how the church interacts with that, how our religious values are in the world, and in the midst of all this, we just have to love. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love, a weekly conversation about what's going on in the world, which we look at through our prism of Catholic social values and Catholic social teaching. And that goes back more than a century, when Pope Leo XIII decided he'd butt in and he'd looked at what was going on in the Industrial Revolution and said, hey, not so good for human beings. So we got to make sure that their rights are protected because they're made in God's image and likeness, and work so important to the human person that we got to make sure that they work in decent working conditions. So our Catholic social teaching goes back over 100 years, and we got a few values that are part of that. Sure, the dignity of work is one of them. We believe that we got to pay special attention to the poor. Most recently, we've kind of figured out that we got to pay attention to what's going on in the environment, that that is an important issue. And family, the building block of society, that's critically, critically important. It's also important solidarity, that we kind of think about not merely our own country, but the rest of the world. And we got to think about our community, how we participate in the community and our right to vote and all of those type of things. So those are some of the kind of the main building blocks of our Catholic social teaching. I may have left out one or two of them. You can fill in the blanks when you do that. So let's look at what's going on in the news. Now, you know, Fanny, we like to be very academic in what we do. We want to be very serious about this, but mm-hmm. Somebody wrote an interesting thesis, didn't they? Well, tell me about the thesis. That's interesting.
Yeah, the thesis is, so a student from Northern Arizona University, his name is Cordero McMurray. He wrote his communication.
We know Cordero de Dios, right?
Yeah.
Different Cordero.
Yeah, different Cordero.
Okay. Some of you, the Cordero de Dios is Jesus.
Jesus, right.
He's the Lamb of God.
Lamb of God, yes. So he wrote his Communications and Media Studies master's thesis on Kim Kardashian West.
Ah.
Yeah. So he tweeted a photo of himself at his thesis presentation and captions it, "After taking an extra year, 68 pages, long nights and early mornings, I finally graduated with my master's degree." And then he hashtag KUWTK and then hashtag Kim K thesis. And then, of course, with the power of Twitter and the internet, his wish came true, and Kim Kardashian actually retweeted at him and said, "Congrats, can I get a copy?" So the tweet so far as of Tuesday had 1,300 retweets, 13,000 likes, and 500 comments.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So what do you think, Fanny?
I don't know. You know, I was a communications. I got my master's also in communications.
Oh, so you're a smart one too.
I guess. I actually did my thesis on music.
Okay.
So I understand his angle. But I don't know if I would have done it on Kim Kardashian. She's not my favorite. That's why I'm a little.
Disclosure from my point of view.
Yeah.
I think she's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a perfect example of doing a thesis on her because she's got, 4 billion followers, and she's got...
famous. She's very, very...
and I'm going to betray a little bit of my... And this is not... Can I be not nice for a second?
Sure.
She's made so much out of no talent. I mean, she got nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know... Everybody knows her name.
Yeah.
And so,
I think that has to be some sort of talent for you not to have a specific, like a singer or dancer or whatever it may be, but she's a household name, I think.
She is a marketer.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, again, if we go back, you guys are not old enough, but if you remember, Pet Rocks?
Mm-mm.
Pet Rocks. Jake remembers Pet Rocks.
Yep.
So, I don't know, what, 20 years ago, that was a big rage for a Christmas present. It was simply a rock. And you gave him his presents, and everybody had a pet rock.
Yeah.
But you can say that about most children's toys, I feel like. There's not a whole lot of, like, as a 35-year-old man, there's not that many toys for 8-year-olds where I look at and go, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That absolutely
should be. So compelling.
Yeah, exactly. It's all weird little things with goofy hair or something that goes, and makes a little noise. And for some reason, people trample each other on Black Friday for it.
But Jake, I mean, at least it goes, meh. The rock don't even do that. I mean, so you don't need a battery. I mean, you know, the other thing they should have done with that pet rock, I could have made a lot of money. I should have sold the batteries for the pet rock.
There you go. There you go.
You need two batteries, two AAAs that go with the pet rock.
Were they at least painted? I mean, I remember them existing, but I mean, it was just a rock. It was just a plain gray rock.
Gray rock. Wow. That's it. Yeah, it was there, boy.
So did parents go out into their yard and just get a rock and give it to
their
kids?
Oh, no.
That's a good idea, though.
You bought them.
Oh, my God.
You bought them.
I would have went into my backyard and just gotten a gray rock.
Right, yeah.
Here, kid.
Cut out the middleman.
Anyway, so I think it's a good thing. But, you know what I got to point out, though?
Yeah.
So if I were going to do a doctoral dissertation, okay, I wouldn't do a master's because I'd do mine on Bey.
Yeah.
I'd do it on Beyonce.
Yeah.
If Kim Kardashian can get a 68-page thesis, master's one, I want Beyonce to have a full-blown doctoral dissertation.
I mean, I think that you have a good amount of things to talk about with Beyonce.
Yeah, no,
so it's a good. That would be a good one.
That's right. I think that would be a. You could do a lot on.
Yeah.
That. Okay. So now that we got done with the serious bit of news, what else we got?
So we can talk about the UN's migration compact.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, I mean, again, we talked about Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about the migration compact. What's this thing about?
Sure. So the more than 100 countries met on December 10th and 11th in Morocco.
But countries are always meeting.
Yeah, they are.
So what they meet about this?
So they formally adopted the first treaty on migration negotiation under the UN.
United Nations. Interesting because I thought we had bunches of these treaties. This is the kind of first one.
The first treaty under the UN. Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Global Compact for Migration is the result of 2 years of hard negotiations led by Louis Arbour, a former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. So at first glance, the compact seems a significant breakthrough in times of tough rhetoric and harsh policies for migrants. The draft text acknowledges the rights of migrants and the need to protect vulnerable migrants. However, the compact will not result in immediate changes in how countries treat migrants.
So, I mean, so Fanny, let's kind of break this down a little bit. Mm-hmm. The whole issue of migration always is kind of playing out in at least two different ways, because you have the country that is receiving the migrant and the country from which the migrant is leaving. So you always got two there. And then you get the UN that kind of gets involved in some of these movements. And so there's a lot of different parties who are involved in trying to kind of look at this migration stuff, and then you always get into that question of national sovereignty, and that's an issue that we're talking about here in this country. And national sovereignty, all that simply means is we recognize that a nation is a real thing,
mm-hmm.
and a nation has the responsibility and the right to kind of deal with its own territory in a way that respects that integrity, which is why kind of most of the world got really, really upset when Russia a few years ago said, hey, Ukraine, east part is ours, not yours anymore. Well, I mean, Russia's got all these nuclear weapons. Ukraine's got nothing. So what was the Ukraine going to do to kind of keep them from doing it? So, you know, we do respect that a country and a nation should be able to respect its borders. So anyway, so what's this guy about? What's this treaty about?
So with 85% of the world's refugees housed in developing countries and not in the West,
right.
There's a border crisis that's not widely acknowledged. So the summit produced an agreement to establish two separate tracks of negotiations, one for migration and another for refugees. Refugees are treated differently under international law than migrants because they are fleeing a well-founded fear of persecution.
Okay. All right. So this is interesting. And I think it plays out in our own country. And so actually, you know what? Fanny, I'm going to talk about this now. I was going to wait to the end, but mm-hmm. I'll talk about it now because it relates to this. It relates to this. Earlier this week, we had, as I kind of say, the entertainment channel in the White House.
Yes.
When we had, President Trump along with to-be Speaker Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. with the current majority leader, our own senator here from New York, Chuck Schumer, at an afternoon romper room. I mean, where they, where they kind of are. I found it entertaining. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I mean, it's. I am going to. I actually, when you listen to it, I went to an event earlier this week, and at it was former President Obama. Mm-hmm. Who I have a great deal of admiration for. I think the way he conducted himself in office with his family is a real example of decency and goodness. That doesn't mean I agreed with every single policy of his, but I think you'd be hard put to not appreciate the decency and the way he conducted himself, except he talked too long. He went on and on and on. I mean, it was just like, whatever. So, you know, there's an entertainment value to, you know, when the president, the speaker, the majority leader kind of, you know, get into it in a romper room fashion. It doesn't say a whole lot about how we develop our public policy. But, you know, from an entertainment point of view, it's pretty entertaining to watch it there rather than an hour and a half speech. So the thing that I want to say is, and going back to the national sovereignty thing, and some of the rhetoric that's coming around is just absolutely unacceptable. And it's just not true. And so when we deal with this, and okay, Republicans, Democrats, whomever, everybody, we got to recognize that national security is a legitimate topic to talk about. And we got to talk about how do we protect national security? Well, not everything goes, and not everything is permissible because it doesn't deal with fairness. It doesn't deal with things like that. So it's a legitimate topic, but we got to talk about it real seriously as to how we do this. And gross, exaggerated overstatements about one side wanting this and the other side wanting this just doesn't help us in our public conversation about getting to the right place with regard to this. When we have, you know, situations in Nicaragua where there's real fear there, and what are the criteria by which a country says, okay, we're going to let somebody in because there really is danger where they are? And, one of the things I think we need to recognize the reality is, oftentimes people are fleeing for economic reasons. And currently, I don't know what the new treaty is going to say, but we don't recognize economic hardship as a legitimate reason for one to become a refugee. Now, we do say migrate, you can come, but you don't get that special category of a deep fear of persecution, a deep fear of that, simply if it's poverty. Now, from our Catholic perspective, that's why we say that we need a policy that's generous. We need a policy that's fair, because we do believe that there should be a certain amount of migration for economic reasons. Not completely. We don't believe in open borders. And from our Catholic perspective, which is probably a little different than most of the policy in the country, who do we care about, Fanny? Who do we? What country do we care about in addition to our own who's receiving a migrant?
The country that the migrant's coming from?
Exactly. Because we believe we're all part of God's world.
Right.
And while a lot of the debate about policy says, well, we should encourage the best, the brightest, the smartest to come here to make our country better, from our Catholic social teaching, we say, not so much. Not so much, because it'd be much better if we could develop the economies in those countries, develop the political structures in those countries, develop the human potentials in those countries so that there wouldn't be the forced migration even for economic reasons. So on some of those issues, we take a little bit of a different perspective than some others in the country. So anyway, I got an idea. Why don't we take a break?
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll do a little music?
Yes.
We're going to do John the Baptist?
Yes.
We're going to do Mary?
Yep.
We're going to do Joseph?
Yep.
Isn't that appropriate for Advent?
Yes, very.
Just Love. Join us when we come back. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Remember those walls I built. Welcome back to Just Love. This is Advent, the time of John the Baptist, the time of Mary, the time of Joseph. And so let's get right into Advent music. Fanny, what are we going to look at? What are we going to listen to, and what are we going to talk about?
So you suggested that we look at...
Now you're going to blame me?
No. I want to give you credit for kind of starting this up in my head.
Okay.
So you suggested that we look at What a Wonderful Beginning by Kathy Mattea.
Okay.
So that kind of led me into thinking about other songs from other people's perspectives that wasn't God or Jesus.
Okay.
The main players, I guess, of Advent and the Nativity. So the first one we're going to look at is a song that talks about John the Baptist and the beginning of of this journey, not just Advent, but, you know, of Jesus and his mission, his ministry.
Okay.
So can we play the first clip of
What a Woman? Old man named John the Baptist had been heralding the news about the coming of a Savior for both the Gentiles and the Jews.
Hey, that's I like this song. I know this song. Mm-hmm. So, Fanny, I think we got to tell our audiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, John the Baptist is not a he's got a stake in this game, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's. Well, he was the one that baptized Jesus, other than that,
right.
But
well,
to the beginning.
And who else? I mean, what else is it? I mean, why did he do Jesus?
Well, from the beginning, he jumped when Mary walked in the door. When he was a baby, I mean, the womb.
Okay.
So I think because this is a Christmas themed music segment, I thought it was very appropriate to have him because he was the first one that kind of, you know, jumped at Jesus like, hey, God is here.
Yeah, but doesn't he have a little conflict of interest?
Does he?
Why?
Don't
we have nepotism here?
I guess so.
I mean, didn't we just pick on, rightfully so, the wife of the president of Nicaragua? We got the cousin who's kind of, he's hawking his cousin, right?
Yeah, but he was sent because, you know, his father Zechariah and the angel came to the Zechariah and told him about John and what his future would be.
Okay.
So it's not like he was just a regular Joe Schmo.
I'm kidding around a little bit because my parish when I was growing up was John the Baptist.
So he's your favorite.
He's my favorite.
Yeah.
But I like him because I think he's not afraid to do his job of pointing out Jesus, but he doesn't get in the way when they say, okay, hey, John the Baptist, are you the man?
Right.
He said, no, me. Not me. He said, him.
Mm-hmm.
Him. So he wasn't afraid to herald, as he says. And but when the time came, he realized that he wasn't the one.
Yep.
And he kind of
stepped out
and pointed to Jesus. So that's why I like John the Baptist. You want to do another clip from this, or you want to go on to our next one?
Let's go on to our next one.
Okay.
We can do, actually, this is a good lead-in because it's Mary.
Okay.
So this song I found out about months ago.
Okay.
And I hadn't ever heard it. But, you know, I think that a lot of us, especially in the Hispanic culture, think of Mary as this very gentle woman that does everything that God says, et cetera, et cetera. This song I really like because it shows a more emotional side of Mary and a more, I guess she was a little bit fearful of this great responsibility that God gave her.
Okay.
So if we can listen to the first clip.
Everything inside me cries for order. Everything inside me wants to hide. Is this shadow an angel or a warrior? If God is pleased with me, why am I so terrified?
Wow, I don't know that one. I never heard that one.
Yeah.
But it kind of gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's very human of her in these words, which I've never thought of her in this way because she's so willing when Angel Gabriel comes to her to do God's will that you don't even think about her emotion. Like, is she scared? Like, you know, things like that. So I think that these lyrics are pretty cool.
Why don't we listen to this? You want to listen to the second clip before we talk a little bit more about
sure,
it?
Sure, sure. Yeah. Okay. Can we listen to the second one?
I am not brave. I'll never be. The only thing my heart can offer is a vacancy. I'm just a girl
Fanny, that's beautiful. Yeah. I've never heard that before. Yeah. Do you know the artist?
Francesca Battistelli.
Right.
I think I butchered her name really badly.
You really did. You really did. But
I'm sorry, Francesca.
But she's not here, so we'll get away with it.
So,
it's Fran.
Fran.
Right.
There you go. That's much easier. But she, I believe that she's not Catholic, which is more interesting to me.
She's probably evangelical.
I think so, yeah. So, I'll actually look her up. But, I think this song is amazing from Mary's perspective.
So here's, I mean, one of the reasons why we do segments like this, this is a little different than some of the other segments mm-hmm. we do, is because I got a bias. So this is my bias. My bias is that we make religion too holy.
Right.
And because we make it so holy, we think it's above us all.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's only for the perfect people. And we go about our little ways mm-hmm. saying, well, I can't do that because of it. And so we don't do anything. And I think song like this, imagine what our belief is, that the angel comes to Mary and says, you've been chosen
yeah.
to be the mother of God, and the birth is going to happen in a very, very special way. Well, I mean, you know, she's saying, are you an angel? Are you a
right.
warrior? I mean, hey, I mean, what's, okay, I'm willing, but... Somebody's got to explain this
yeah.
to my family what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really, really, really important thing.
It's a different perspective on her.
It really is.
Yeah.
So you want to do Joseph?
Sure, let's do one more clip of Joseph.
Can you feel the weight of your glory? Do you understand? Does the Father guard your heart for now so you can sleep tonight?
So this is Joseph's Lullaby by Mercy Me. And just to kind of describe this song, right before this verse, he's talking to Jesus as a baby, as a sleeping baby. So he's kind of just wondering, like, I wonder if this baby knows what he's in for, basically, which I think is interesting because in a family, the father or the husband is supposed to be the protector. So his feelings about this birth are slightly different than Mary's. He's more concerned about, you know, what's going to happen to my son.
So here's my take on this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think what you say is right. Is good. But here's my take on it, okay? You know, in our Catholic theology, we kind of always refer to Joseph as the foster father of, or the stepfather mm-hmm. of, because we believe in the Immaculate, the virgin birth of Jesus,
right.
et cetera, et cetera. But in the world we live in, that there are so many families in which you got a stepmom and a stepfather, mm-hmm. and they're not the biological father. But I just know of so many of those in which the stepfather, the stepmom, they treat those kids just like their own.
Yep.
As good. And so this seems to me to speak to the contemporary world where, you know, being a parent is more than biology. It's got to do with nurturing. It's got to do with caring. It's got to do with all of those type of things. And it seems to me that this could almost be an anthem mm-hmm. for step parents.
Yeah,
it's just so beautiful. That's there. Is there one more clip here?
Yeah, we can play the last clip.
Go to sleep, my son, and baby, come. Soon enough, you'll save the day. But for now, dear child of mine, oh my Jesus, sleep tight.
know, that is just so beautiful. Isn't that a wonderful Advent song? And it could be God singing to each of us.
Yes.
My child, sleep tight, rest in my peace, and you'll save the world because you have to participate with me in my salvation. You do your little part, I do a big part, but sleep tight, I'm with you. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.